Hello and welcome back to the Candid Community Leadership Podcast. I'm Brady Quinn, Business Retention Specialist with Marion Economic Development Corporation. If this is your first time joining us, this is a podcast where we want to inspire you as a business leader, a community leader, an entrepreneur, or frankly, a leader wherever you might have influence. For those of you who have listened in before, you know we cover a lot of topics on this podcast. Today's podcast is a recording from earlier this week of a quarterly event we hosted at Cowork 1107. Go to cowork1107.com to learn more about Marion's co-working option. This event we hosted was called The Story Of. This live recorded event connects a successful entrepreneur to the community to engage and energize the Marion entrepreneurial ecosystem. The Story Of series was launched to connect successful entrepreneurs with today's startups in Marion. All right. Welcome to The Story Of. We're here today with Farmers State Bank. They've been locally owned for their entire 96-year history and been owned by the Neighbor family since 1968, when Morris Neighbor traded his Army Sergeant uniform for a banker suit in 1945. Well, he had no idea the legacy he would create for himself and his family. Morris worked his way through leadership roles at the bank until 1968, when Morris and his wife Betty purchased Farmers State Bank. Today, FSB boasts over $1 billion in assets and over $130 million in capital, with 7 branches across Linn and Johnson counties. With more than 150 employees, its size is personal enough to know and understand its employees, but also large enough to accommodate business relationships of all sizes. All right, joining us today for this Story Of series is the Neighbor family. Medco, we are very honored to welcome with us today Farmers State Bank President and CEO Gene Neighbor, the FSB Chairman, Kent Neighbor, the FSB Vice Chairman, Doug Neighbor, and current Executive Vice President, Steve Neighbor. Okay, let's talk more about what motivated Morris to purchase the bank back in the 1960s.
I get to address that one. Bottom line is, I think I'll address that as an opportunity that he had. And that sounds easy, but it really wasn't that easy. The bottom line is, if you remember Paul Harvey and the rest of the story, I'm going to tell you that. Having said that, I'm going to start clear back, you know. The dad, you know, of course, was in the Battle of the Bulge and liberated the concentration camps. Quite a tour in Germany and Europe. And the bottom line is, come home to a wife and me to support. And through the GI Bill, I had the opportunity, the president of the bank at Farmers State, which was Farmers State, had been closed twice before and renamed. The bottom line is, through the Depression, had an opportunity to hire Dad because half the salary was paid by the government if he was a GI. So he started there. That's where he got his start. And that was clear back in 45. And he worked hard. The bottom line is, banking was different then. You did a little everything, your hours were long, whatever. But he learned a lot. Unfortunately, W.N. Schellenberger purchased the bank in 54, and they hit it off really, really good. I mean, the bottom line is, Shelley was very progressive in Marion. He did a lot of things, and in those days, there was only a couple banks in Marion. And they soon outgrew the spot they had on Main Street there. And Shelley set forward to build a new building that we are in now. And the bottom story, and I think he started that in 66. And the bottom line is, unfortunately, I'll back up a little, Shelley and Lucille had no children. And through that process of building that building, kind of towards the end of it, he acquired cancer. and he wanted to sell his estate, and he wanted cashed out, so his wife had no, you know, dealings with the bank anymore. And so, having said that, I give the dad the opportunity to purchase the bank, and it was quite a sum of money. And both of them come out of the Depression, so my mom was dead set against it. I mean, really dead set against it. And I can understand that, because they were doing fine, and she didn't want to be broke again. But having said that, time went on, and so he turned him down, and then Shelly had kind of the medication that he was on was working pretty good. Having said all that, time went by, and things went pretty good. But in 1968, had a reoccurrence, and he offered it to Dad one more time, and he just said, "If you are not interested in the bank, I'm going to put it on the market." And at that point in time, Dad had to find financing. So consequently, he did, actually we sat down and visited a little bit about it, and I said, "You might as well see if you can buy the bank. If you can't get money, then it's a no-brainer." So he did get a hold of Harold Mangold, which is senior officer down to Merchants National Bank. They were friends, and they did loan him the money, 4%, 10 years, and the rest is history. So having said that, that was his motivation, it was opportunity.
Okay, now let's move on. Break down this neighbor family tree for us. For those who are involved in the bank specifically, you guys truly are a family-owned and family-run business. I'm sure each of you might have examples of the privilege that is, but maybe also the challenges that come with it. That family business can be tricky, and what do you guys have to add related to that?
Well, from Morris and Betty, three boys were born, and Kent's the oldest, I'm the middle, Gene's the youngest. As far as bank members, obviously all of us are involved. Kent's second son, Scott, senior vice president, and manages the Albanet office, kind of in charge of our ag lending portfolio. And then Gene's son, Jason, works here at the Marion office, and is in the operations side of the bank, and does a really nice job for us there. Over the years, we've had other family members that have been involved in the bank as well. Another one of Kent's sons, Mark, worked for us for a few years, and now he's involved with their family business, Neighbor Insurance Services. Then my daughter, Stephanie, worked at the bank for probably 20 years or close to that, and now she's an entrepreneur here in Marion, and actually my wife worked for the bank for a while as well, and I think we had a granddaughter of Kent's, Amber, which is his oldest daughter's.
That's right.
Oldest daughter.
Oldest daughter's child.
Child, yeah. And she worked in our marketing department for a while too. So, but this is the kind of the current group here now.
What were the initial goals or aspirations that your family had when you started the bank? And how do you feel those goals and aspirations have evolved over time?
Okay, I'll take that one.
All right.
The initial goal, of course, when Mom and Dad purchased the 51% was to get the debt paid for. So to continue to operate Farmer State Bank as a community bank and to earn sufficient that they could dividend enough income off to go ahead and pay for that debt. And that was 51% that they initially purchased. Later on, not too many years after that, Dad stepped out again and borrowed more money from Merchants National Bank and to buy up to 80% at that point. So I would say probably the number one goal of all that was to make sure that we were on solid footing and to get that debt paid. I think the other thing is we were Farmer State Bank has always been known as a good community bank, and I think it was always the family goal to make it the best community bank in the in this community, and I think we've done a good job of succeeding in that realm. But as you look at the banking industry, the biggest thing is, first of all, you know, we're there to help the community, not only just, you know, the public aspect of it, but all the individuals within. So we're lending money to make businesses and customers stronger. That helps the community. We're there to help finance the schools, municipalities. That is helping the community be stronger. And then, of course, how we give back into the community, I think, is very important on helping nonprofits and other organizations to become stronger. So that, in my mind, is kind of the short-term and long-term goals of Farmer State Bank.
All right. When you think about the history of Farmer State Bank, over the past 55 years, is there anything specifically that you recall as what you would feel as one or two key milestones throughout the history?
I would say we had a huge one, and that was the farm crisis. That was terrible for our state. That was terrible for the banking industry, and we were not set aside from that tyranny. The bottom line is, it's really set up like it is today. Say all you want. If you want to back up, history always repeats itself, and it's doing it right now. In the mid-70s, you know, we had land somewhere in that $800 an acre thing. I think in the fall of 73, corn hit 330. That's the highest it's been in a long time. And when it come right down to it, that just started the inflation gauge. And so consequently, at that time, it proceeded to bounce up and down till it hit the 80s. I think in the 80s, it was like 19.5%. Staggering for the ag sector. On top of it all, in like in 82 or 3, the administration embargoed 50 of our countries of our trade. Don't ask me quite why, but the bottom line is, including Russia, who was a big user. Consequently, it threw us into a tremendously high inflation area, and one third of Iowa changed hands, and it was a distressful time. A lot of families lost their land. It was just a unique situation in our history I never want to see again. But having said that, you know, the Farmer State Bank wasn't immune to that, because we had a lot of ag customers, and consequently we did everything we could to keep them going. But I remember distinctly in 83 when we had an audit, they said we were doing great. Year and a half later, they came in and said, they took our statements, cut them in half on everything there was, and said, collect or charge it off. So consequently, it was a very stressful time for everybody. And I distinctly remember at the time, sitting down, and my dad, we kind of went over the books, and I said, Dad, we could lose $8 million. And I said, well, the blessing is we always kept high capital. We always kept high capital. He said, we'll be all right. But we did cut our profit sharing from 15 to 7.5 and continued on with business without a doubt. It was an interesting time. But the end of that period, I think, through, let's see, I'm going to say 84, 5, 6, and some of 7, it was really rough. The bottom line, farmers couldn't survive. Corn dropped back to $1.15. It made some good men not quite as honorable as they were. The bottom line is, it's one of those situations I never want to see again. So we did, of course, do well through this thing. Luckily, our stress lasted over 3 years instead of 1 year, or it would have been a little different situation. But without a doubt, I lived that because I was in agriculture. I knew all the farmers. and they was tough on everybody. But
he lived it, but I was a loan officer.
You know, in regards to that, I'll never forget that, because Gene Neighbor, you know, he started at Albernette, and he had a seasoned loan officer ahead of him, then moved.
6 months after I started.
And this young guy.
Baptism by fire.
Oh, my God. I felt sorry for him, because I'm thinking, you don't know a lot about agriculture. And it was interesting times, but we survived, we thrived, and
maybe came out stronger.
Maybe
as far as diversification,
yes,
you know, it was very much an ag bank back then, and I think you guys from that really diversified who our customer base was and so forth.
Yeah, thanks for that, Steve. But it's kind of funny, because back in the 70s, I was trading tractors for $3,000 every other year. Good tractors. It was interesting times.
What sets Farmers State Bank apart, not just from the larger corporate banks, but even the other community banks, in terms of your values, your principles, and more specifically, your customer experience?
Yeah, Brady, that's a good question. Two different sets there, I guess, but you know, community banks such as FSB, they're just different than the big corporate regional banks. You know, first of all of our decisions get made about a block and a half right over there. I mean, everything, and we can meet quickly and make decisions quickly. We're all sitting right beside each other, so we hire all of our talent right here in this area, including, you know, our upper talent. Of course, the regional banks have some people they hire, but the lead of marketing or HR, accounting, you know, all those folks we hire, support right here. All those folks, you know, support our nonprofits, our schools, our churches, and so forth. So it kind of trickles back into the community, just the folks we get hired here. And then giving back, I think that is a little bit of a difference too, or a large difference. You know, not only the hours that our incredible, talented coworkers serve, you know, the volunteer hours we track it. It's a huge amount of volunteer hours in the community we have. But also financially, we try to be generous to the nonprofits, schools, and so forth. So, you know, when it comes to other community banks, that's a little more difficult to differentiate. Just because, you know, they're kind of like us, and we've got some good friends, competitive friends in the community. So I can't really speak on what they do, but we do stick to our core values. And right in our core values, you know, the honesty, integrity, the golden rule is right in our core values. You know, do unto others as you want to be treated. So it's served us well so far.
Something that Dad always said and that sticks in our minds yet is that we need to treat our customers as if we were invited them into our own home. So I think that's very important.
Very important.
One big value of Farmers State Bank that we all know and love here in the city of Marion is just how you guys give back to the community. We are sitting here today in the Farmers State Bank training room at Medco, at Marion Economic Development, as well as our co-working location, Cowork 1107. Go to cowork1107.org to learn more about that opportunity. But we could also spend another 20 minutes alone talking about all of the community initiatives and organizations that you and Farmers State Bank have supported on a regular basis. Why do it? And at what point in the history of Farmers State Bank did that so deeply define who you are as an organization?
I think you know, that kind of came to light almost as soon as Mom and Dad bought the bank. from the very early times that I was with the bank, you know, Dad always stressed that you know, you make your money here in the community or the communities that we live in. It's our responsibility, and not only a responsibility, but a pleasure to be able to give back to that community to help support, you know, all the good things that happen in the community. And I remember him telling early on when Lenmar was in its infancy, the school district financially was struggling a little bit, and of course they issue warrants, which is basically a promise to pay once they get funding from the state, and there weren't any other banks that would purchase those warrants, and Dad made the decision that they were going to do that. So that was one of the very first things that I can recall, that not just a nonprofit, getting to nonprofits, but to an organization that really has become one of the premier school districts in the state. So that's kind of just a philosophy that he had going in, and fortunately, you know, the bank has been able to, through the profits, set aside money every year, and we have a budget, and we go through that every year, and make sure that we're trying to cover a spectrum of
charities
that are deserving. So start from the beginning.
Okay, how about any unique traditions, values, or is there even you know, a non-negotiable that you feel has been passed down through maybe not just the generations of Farmer State Bank, but as well as the neighbor family?
Well, a few of the traditions, they're kind of business community traditions that we've started or been able to be a part of. You know, for 25 plus years, we've had four concerts in the park, Marion by Moonlight every June. We've, you know, just had that. I was out there last night in Lau Park, and it was another great event. So so we're proud to be part of that. I believe we were, I know we were key in the Marion Arts Festival. I think we've been the leading sponsor since the inception of that, and that's 25 plus years also. So that's a real neat event for our town, our community. Summer fiesta block parties coming up, and we've done that for 20 some years with, I don't know if Kyle's here, but Martin Gardner and FSB have sponsored that PM Exchange. Everyone says it's one of the better ones for the year, and it's July 20th coming up. If you've never been to one, good food and drink and so forth. And
Carlos and Kelly's are in there
too. Yep. Yeah, thank you, Doug. Yes, that's who's catering that. So anyway, so those are some of the traditions in the area. And I was thinking of things passed down generation to generation. We didn't rehearse this with each other, but what I thought of was that what Grandpa has always taught, you know, treat your customers as though they're coming into your living room. And, you know, I think all of our coworkers do that. And it's, again, served us well.
How has Farmer State Bank evolved and adapted to changes in the financial industry? We've obviously seen a lot of changes even over the last few years and continuing into this year. What about customer needs as well over the years? Obviously, we've seen that change drastically, not just in services, but in expectations. Can you expand on that in Farmer State Bank perspective, please?
I think one of the biggest things that have happened in this community is from our onset at Farmer State Bank has been the amount of competition that has come into the area. As it was mentioned earlier, there was just two banks here in town. FSB come in 1945 into the town, and the other bank that was already here was First National. I'll have to say that FSB had a reputation of being more progressive and more willing to work with customers at that time, so it gave us a big advantage, and thanks to the people that we had working for us. But over the years, you know, the competition just continues throughout, as all businesses and all their customers, you know, you have more competition all the time. But trying to stay current with all the new trends, all the electronics that are involved in banking now, trying to keep current on all the regulations. It's a substantial amount of work that is involved with that. I think Kent mentioned something about the 70s and the farm crisis. I think it not only affected the farms, but also our developments in town and various things because of the high interest rates. Basically, housing stopped. So a lot of those developments were stopped and put on hold. So as a result of that, I think we took a look at our mix of loans, which was basically one-third consumer, a third was farm, and a third of it was commercial. And that mix has changed substantially now. So we've evolved. The consumer side is still very important to us, but it is a lower percentage. The farm is very important. It's a lower percentage. But we've increased more on the commercial real estate in that direction. So it has evolved that way as far as Farmer State Bank. I think that's probably some of the biggest changes that we've seen in the financial industry. It's just a busy world out there.
I'll never forget, I walked in the office, which Gene was managing at that time, and then he pointed up to the wall where our rate sheet was, 15% CDs.
Of course, interest rates to loans were 18 and 21.
At least. Yeah. At least.
Thus, the problems.
Yeah. Cattle loans, 18 and a half. It was brutal. It was brutal.
Okay, the changing landscape of banking, kind of like we talked up above. How has Farmer State Bank focused on maintaining its independence and family ownership?
That would be mine. The bottom line is, it was one of those situations where you pretty much summed it up. We sit down and tried to figure out how can we secure our family ownership and what we wanted to accomplish in our biggest threat. So consequently, we ended up thinking that we should have an S corporation election, which we did proceed with. But having said that, we had 49 minority stockholders who were very proud to have stock in Farmer State Bank. And that was, we really pondered over that, because the bottom line is that that was going to be a tough road, because a lot of these folks had given their, divided their stock up against maybe their children or whatever, and we struggled with that. And it's one of those situations that we ended up, we paid them very well. I think there was 1,545 shares of stock out there. I think we paid just under $4,000 a share. It was over $6 million we put into them, but that was really, we did get it accomplished, and that kind of ensured that it let us do our S corporation. We ended up, we had Neighbor Insurance Agency Incorporated, and having said that, it's our holding company, and we have basically gifted out a lot to our heirs of that holding company. But that was a tough one for us, and because those people were really proud to have those shares. But
one of the things that we were finding at the time was that, as Kent alluded to, was that a lot of those early shareholders had. Were getting older, and a lot of them had died, and most, a big share of those shares of stock were now held by people who weren't alone in the community.
That helped.
It was a hard decision to make, but it was one that we felt better for our community to have that ownership local rather than spread out over the United States, basically. So,
what year was that then?
That was in 2002.
2002. Yep. Yeah. Never forget it.
And just to expound on that, a subchapter S corporation for the bank has some pretty restrictive rules on who can be the shareholders. There were some limitations, and we wanted to get those all into the family name at that point. So that was one of the biggest reasons why we did that. So Neighbor Insurance Agency, Inc., which is the holding company, became the sole owner of the shares. Now there's all of our family members then are shareholders of Neighbor Insurance Agency, Inc. So that's differentiates from Neighbor Insurance Services, Inc., that some of Kent's family is involved with. So.
Like we mentioned earlier, over 55 years now of neighbor family ownership of the bank. Is there a large obstacle throughout that history that you navigated as a bank or as a leadership team that really sticks out to you? And then more specifically, could you maybe expand on what you learned from that obstacle?
Well, I would say the biggest one that we had to negotiate has been talked about already, and that was the high inflation of the 70s and the difficulties in the 80s with the very extremely high interest rates and the stress it presented on not just our community bank, but community banks throughout the whole United States, basically. I think that was extremely stressful for all bankers, and we were able to successfully navigate that, so that was very important. I think the other two that are probably, in my mind, the most important have recently happened. One was the 2020 pandemic, and, of course, the closure of a lot of, the shelter, basically closing the doors on businesses as ordered, but as a essential business, we stayed open. We had to modify our organization substantially at that time. We could not have anyone in our lobbies, so we ran a lot of business through our drive-ups. We negotiated loans. We did just about open new accounts. We did everything we could through our drive-up facilities. Did a lot of work at home, so it was just a mad rush of getting all the equipment and everything out to everybody's individual homes, getting their connections. Our IT department just did a fantastic job. I don't think we hardly missed a beat. And it was very important that we did that because that's when the PPP program came out, and that was so essential for our businesses. And Steve, you can probably relate, how many loans did we do in just a short period of time? It was millions of dollars.
Millions of dollars, probably 60 million and probably 300 loans.
And we
didn't even know for how it was going to work either.
And there were so many obstacles doing that. I mean, the connection to the government websites and everything were, you had such a window. We had our loan officers, I mean, they were staying up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning or later, getting access to the website so we could get those loans processed. But it was so essential to our customers that they had to have that. We just did what we had to. And then I think the third one is the derecho that come through the town in all of Linn County in that area. I think that was huge. So insurance companies were very beneficial, and it was difficult to get things rebuilt, but I think those are the three that, in my mind, have been the most critical in my banking career.
The only thing I'll piggyback, it's funny because, you know, there's a couple trillion dollars designated for PPP. And so we weren't the only bank. All the bankers were working long because we were worried we were going to run out of funds and our customers wouldn't get those PPP. So we were rushing to do it. Well, even bankers that work with money don't realize how much $1 trillion is. The whole United States could not blow through that $2 trillion all that quickly. We literally could have worked a lot less hard for that week or two. but we were worried and wanted to get it done. So,
but that's I think that showed to our customers, our willingness to work with them. I think that was very important.
Okay, technology, innovation, obviously those are buzzwords in business in general, but especially in banking. What does that look like at Farmer State Bank?
Yeah, good question, Brady. The technology, innovation.
it's a balancing act, really. I mean, the opportunities to invest in technology are limitless. And a community bank, we get to spread that over 7 branches. We're not spreading that cost over 200 or what have you. So we're always have 2 to 3 technology projects in place to upgrade, whether it's online banking or app or what have you, cybersecurity, preventing fraud and so forth. So constantly investing in that. But the little difference that might be different than some of your folks' business, when we invest in technology, let's say, 5 years ago, you could not take a picture of a check and deposit it into your account, at least at Farmer State Bank. It was maybe just starting then. But, of course, we can do that today. Well, most time you invest in technology and innovation, you're eliminating some slower, older, labor-intensive process. Well, we still have to keep that. We've got a lot of customers that they're lucky to have a flip phone. And so they don't care about that technology. So we've got to invest in technology for our future customers. But yet so many of our long-term, strong, healthy, robust customers want to walk in and see that teller. They want to drive up. They want their statements mailed to them and all the old services. So we're investing, but we don't necessarily get to eliminate some of the other services. And that's the same with maybe some of your customer businesses too. But so we're constantly improving. I would say we aim to be an early adopter of technology versus like cutting edge. It's costly, and we want to make sure some of those technologies work. And so I think we aim for being an early adopter. Wasn't always the case. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, ATMs were a new thing, believe it or not. And so FSB had more ATMs than any other community bank in Iowa. And we had every Me Too store, for some of you old enough to remember the grocery stores, every Hy-Vee, a lot of convenience chains in town here. We would run ATM machines.
ATM, and we also did all their point of sale.
All their points, that's correct.
So it was substantial.
And so it was a decent little profit center, because back then I was a college kid, and I'd come home and work in that department. And I can say this now because we don't do it anymore, but we would load up before a busy weekend, like 250,000 cash in leather bags, put them in the back of a four-door car, myself getting paid $4 an hour or whatever it was, went out with a middle-aged person, and we loaded up ATM machines. And
it was secure.
It was secure, yeah. We locked the door every time we went in.
The bag had a zipper.
Yeah. And some of these convenience stores and grocery stores weren't in the best parts of town. But God was watching over us. We did that for many years it all worked out fine. But once we decided, we probably should have armed guards and Brinks trucks do that, the profitability really shrunk down. The cost multiplied. So, but anyway, it's kind of an interesting story.
I think went right down through the generations.
Oh, yeah, there's cousins did that. Brothers did that.
My son did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of other employees. So, yeah, it was fun. A little uncomfortable once in a while, you'd be loading that cash and someone would look over, what are you doing there?
No one. Well, I want to give the room folks here who've come to attend, and we appreciate you guys taking your time to come listen to our story of Farmer State Bank today. Any questions from the audience, just for the group here?
What's your view this is not a political question, but Biden, wants to do away with some of the student loans and stuff. But at what point did you guys do student loans? And what was your feeling on that when the government kind of took that away?
Way back in the early days of student loans, yes, we participated in the program, but none of those were held in-house. Those are all went through the Student Loan Association. But, I've
and I think I can speak for my brothers and nephew Steve, but you know, if you borrow money, you're expected to pay it back.
Amen.
Yep. Can I share a story on why we chose to open our bank accounts with FSB last week?
Sure. We appreciate it.
Wow. We actually I moved here from Michigan 9 months ago, and so our attorneys, Ackley, Kopecky, and Kingerly,
mm-hmm.
and I said, well, we want to open up two business accounts, and you know, easy is going to be multi-million deposits every month within 12 months or less. I said, so obviously we went through what we were going to be doing, and I said, well, I looked at this one bank, and you know, they've got about a dozen branches. And I said, do you have any recommendations based on what I told you we're going to be doing? And she said, oh, FSB. And I said, what's that stand for? And she said, well, Farmer State Bank. I said, oh, okay. I said, I think I drove by one of the things. She goes, oh, you have to go in there, right? And I said, all right, I'll give them a try. So I put in both applications at both banks at the same time for our business accounts. Because I wanted to test them. You know, I mean, our last company before we sold it, we had 30,000 employees in 20 countries. So we knew a thing or two about banking from a business perspective. I knew what we were looking for. So I put in both applications at the same time. They're okay, they're going to tell us. We will know based on what they do and how they respond. So I walk into the branch over at Centerpoint, right? And very nicely welcomed. It's a very nice branch. So go in, and Rusty Smith and Troy Sill from that branch. So these guys aren't bankers. They're super bankers. I mean, give these guys a cake or something. So I walk in, and I mean, right there, didn't have to wait, took in the office. And as we're talking, I could tell the difference between what I'd had with the other bank, right? Because most banks basically are 10 to 20% plus or minus all their competitors, services-wise, you know? So I'm looking for that other thing, you know? The specific part that really makes a big difference, and that's the service and exceeding expectations. So talking there, and I could tell that I was talking with Rusty and Jim, that they're really genuinely listening, because there's the ones that say, can I help you with anything else? And you're hearing, because I'm so busy, can I help you anything else? Because I got to get on with what else I got to do. So, and then there's the ones that say, I really am interested in what you're doing. I got that from Rusty and Jim. And they sat there, and man, they were engaged. I mean, they put through that application. Within 3.5 days, I formally withheld the other application and took it back from the other bank and said, your response time isn't near what we're looking for. I mean, when I called Rusty and Troy, I'm telling you, within an hour or two, they responded. I'm happy if I get a response in a day. You know, I tell everyone,
awesome.
4 hours, I respond. Like within hours. So now the second time I go in the bank, which is mind-boggling, I walk in, and the gal, I don't even know who her name is. She says, oh, hi, are you here to see Troy? I've only been here once. She goes, oh, I know, you were here with Troy Rusty. I thought, what the heck? Who are these people that know, you know, just recognize my face when I walked in? And these are the bank. And I can tell you truthfully, with automating the ordinary and humanizing exception, FSB, and we chose to open two bank accounts last week there. They have been superior, and those guys are awesome. And I smiled when you said what you said about it's like inviting you into their own home. That's exactly what I felt like. And so the other bank lost our business. And they gave both same shot, same time, twice as many branches. It's not what I was looking for.
Awesome.
I'm looking for the emotional gratification and, you know, exceeding my expectations, not just saying what you're going to do, but I expect you to exceed it, because we teach our people to do the same thing, right? And so that's why we chose to open two business accounts last week at FSB, and we look forward to a very long and prosperous relationship with your bank. And I want to say, when I first thank you for sending out the memo about the meeting, and I thought, and it was just funny because I just opened the accounts, right? So it's a story after that. And I look at that, oh, Brady goofed up. He sent the picture of the three pictures of the same guy. I swear to God, I look at all of them related, of course.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Do you do commercials?
That's
yeah.
probably under 2 years now, getting closer to the 2 year mark. And one, thank you. It is just clear just how much your family cares about this community. And in my line of work, that's really important to have partnerships like you all that really care and with every fiber of your being. And I think that, you know, from your business perspective, from your corporate citizenship here in Marion and in the region, but your family really kind of, your family, the family values really kind of sets the, it's the platinum standard. So kudos to you all. It's quite what you've done to take your parents' legacy and vision and continue it on. I would agree with you that you guys have really done it. You're just excelling. It's awesome to be part of it.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Everyone, how would you guys compare what's happening today in the banking? Because obviously it's not 19 or 18% interest rates, but how would you compare what we're facing today with inflationary pressures, the interest rate increases, to what you saw in the 70s? Because I'm a kid who grew up with nowhere near 19% inflation, and my dad reminds me routinely, this is a long part compared to what we dealt with. But what is the perspective you have on what we're facing today with inflation and interest rates versus what that looked like when the farming crisis was happening?
I think one of the biggest differences in my mind right now is the Federal Reserve keeps channeling their focus on, in my mind, the unemployment numbers. And they're trying to get those unemployment numbers up to bring inflation down. One of the biggest problems is we don't have the people in the workforce. We had a lot of people that left the workforce or have elected not to work. So because of that, finding people to work is causing the wages to go up, which actually helps fuel the inflation. So I'm not sure their philosophy of raising the interest rates continually is ever going to hit that mark. So it's very difficult to even really judge based off of what was happening then to what is happening now, other than the fact that we do need to curb what our government is spending, because that is also helping to fuel inflation. That's just my personal opinion.
I'd like to put my two cents worth in there too, Gene. You pretty much hit it on the head. When you throw $6 trillion in the economy, you're going to fire inflation. And I don't know how we're going to offset that. I don't think we've worked through it yet. And I'm not sure how long it's going to take, because I've had people say, how long are we going to endure a little higher inflation? But to be honest, you know, when I was in college, 7% interest was standard. And we've just had a borrower's delight for the last 10 years. It's unique. And it's really difficult for us as bankers to get that mindset changed. And meeting with customers, it's taken us longer than I thought.
I look back as talking to some younger lenders here in the past week, and I look back because I was just curious, you know, 5% increase in prime over the last 15 months, basically. I've never seen that. You certainly have never seen it, Eric, but these guys did. I mean, you go back, but the last time it went up that much was 79-80, but I want to say it went up maybe 9% in 1 year.
Almost 10%.
Almost 10%. So it was as twice the shock, you know. It seemed like a big shock for all of us this past year, but so hopefully it's half as bad. So
the challenge that presents is that when for the banking industry is when the deposit rates raise so quickly, we were putting commercial loans on with threes in front of them, you know, and now we're paying almost 5% for a CD, so that margin is...
It's hard to work on that spread.
And of course, with the high inflation, that has kind of curtailed the lending, so getting those deposits repriced is...
So obviously pandemic, you adjusted all your working processes, you have people working from home, you set up all that stuff, and now obviously it's time to come back together again. Are you seeing any pushback from, I mean, you know, in the day going into a bank with a mascot was a problem, right? Now, you know, now it's okay. So are you seeing any pushback from your employees about getting back into, you know, some doing hybrid, some doing back in the office? How are you handling that?
We are still doing some hybrid with some various departments that don't have any direct customer contact. You know, some of the individuals in our accounting department are working a hybrid where they're in some days and at home some. Our deposit services, which is our bookkeeping, is doing some of that hybrid. And some of our credit analysis department, their interaction, of course, is with all of us as lenders and various things, but they have access to us, is a hybrid. But that's a good point, because when I don't know if any of you follow Ernie Goss, who's an economist out of Creighton University, but he puts out a newsletter. And one of the things he mentioned in just a recent newsletter is the productivity of the United States and the employees has gone down. And he was looking at it from the standpoint of the number of hours worked, and it's only gone down like an hour per employee. But if you spread that over all the employees, he says that would require 1.8 million new employees to offset that loss of productivity. So that's a huge number. And he actually says that this all started with the pandemic and the work from home. So he is equating the loss of productivity to work at home. I don't know if that's true or not. It's really hard to judge how well individuals are working when you don't ever have them around and you can't see them. But unfortunately, I think, fortunately or unfortunately, I think probably hybrid is going to be here to stay for a lot of businesses.
I think so.
It opens up your network.
Yes.
Right, where you can employ people from.
Yes.
Yep.
Right. We actually have one loan processor that was working for us full-time here and for family situations, but moved to Michigan, and she's still working for us.
What does the future of Farmers State Bank look like? 30 years from now, is it there one thing that you were celebrating? What would that be?
Well, Gene just celebrated 50 years this week, as was mentioned before, with some advancement
years
in the medical field and a little determination, we could have our first 80-year FSB banker right here.
See, that would make me 102.
But really, you know, we'd celebrate being a family-owned community bank that keeps serving and providing for and giving back. So that'd be something to celebrate.
Yeah, we have the structure in place where we can continue to be a community bank for a long time.
I want to thank specifically Farmers State Bank, Gene, Kent, Doug, Steve. We appreciate your partnership here at Marion Economic Development to be able to do the things that we do here in our community. Obviously, the community in general appreciates what you guys are able to provide each year. We'll continue to tell this story and share it out, and hopefully some will learn from the lessons and obstacles you as a family-owned bank and just family-run business were able to overcome. Thank you again for joining us today here in the room. Again, this is the Story of series. We come at you once a quarter, the last month of that quarter, and we will continue to be hosted here at the home of Marion Economic Development in Cowork 1107. So please look out here for the third quarter. And thank you again to the neighbors, Farmers State Bank, and everyone here for joining us.